I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We're celebrating 22 years in business and just entering our ninth year of doing open line programs. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have our new 2016 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. Matter of fact, 2017, you'll see some more updates on the website, which will be really cool. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication event tab. Over the years, we've covered just about everything you can imagine. One of the most popular topics has been how to communicate and work with millennials. And that's a wonderful program if you want to look that up. Plus, our new book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icon on our homepage. Our topic today is cybersecurity. It's a panel discussion with some top experts. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to help raise the hiring bar, assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, team building, stress management workshops, and much, much more. In fact, we just opened an office a number of months ago in Taiwan, so if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas of how to interact with a U.S.-based company, please let us know. Our Keeping on Track Open Line series is a response to from our clients, calls that we get regarding topics both domestically and globally to address today's business issues. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion. We'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible, so please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. So during the program, you can either send them in or just hold your questions, write them down, and talk to everybody afterwards. I'm very excited about this program. We have some amazing guests today who are all close friends and colleagues, and let me introduce each one. Peter Bybee is in the security industry, known as a thought leader for over 25 years of experience. Peter has blazed trails in the managed security industry by developing the first managed network access control and managed web application firewall. More recently, he has led his company in developing a breakthrough behavioral analytics and early threat detection platform. Prior to founding Security on Demand, Peter was the founder of Network Vigilance, a national IT security consulting service and solutions provider. He has served as president of the Information Systems Security Association, the ISSA. Peter is a BA from the San Diego State University and holds a CISSP and CISA certification. David Rice, CPA, CITP, is the chief operating officer at Diamond IT, an IT services company located in Central and Southern California with over 25 years combined experience as a CEO, COO, and technology evangelist. David is able to bring creative solutions to the Diamond team and their clients. Before Diamond, David was the managing partner and COO at a regional CPA firm in Los Angeles and later owned a consulting practice called Profound Advisors. David currently holds a CPA license in California and is recognized as a certified information technology professional by the AICPA. Then we have Dr. Stan Stahl, is president of Citadel Information Group, an information security management services firm delivering information peace of mind to business and not-for-profit community. Stan is also president of Secure the Village, a nonprofit providing executives the knowledge and relationships that they need to meet today's cyber crime, cyber privacy, and information security challenges. A pioneer in the field of information security, Stan began his career securing teleconferencing at the White House, databases, inside Cheyenne Mountain and the communications network controlling our nuclear weapons arsenal. Holy cow, Stan. Stan serves on the board of directors of the Content Delivery and Security Association, Governor Brown's California Cybersecurity Task Force, the Board of Advisors of Cyber California, the Industry Advisor Board for Information Technology Program at the Viterbo School of Engineering at USC, and the Advisory Board of UCLA Extension Emergency Management and Homeland Security and Enterprise Risk Management Program. Stan received his PhD degree from the University of Michigan. He is a speaker on cybersecurity. Stan regularly is quoted in media on cybercrime, cyber privacy, and information technology. I feel very privileged to have Peter, David, and Stan with us today to share some amazing ideas so we can all address this most interesting time that we're in. Also, at the end of this program, registration is going to begin for our next program, which is going to be about silos and how to reduce them eliminate them within your organization. I want to welcome all of you to our program. This is a panel discussion. I've asked everyone to address the topics they feel they'd like to. And keep their comments. This is like the debate coming up. Keep their comments to 1, 2, or 3 minutes, and we'll keep this flowing because we have some amazing topics we do want to cover. So again, welcome everybody. Our first topic here is business implications when it comes to cybercrime. What are your thoughts? Who would like to start?
Well, I'll jump in here. This is Stan, and as I mentioned earlier, it's coincidentally, I'm attending today a U.S. Attorney's Office summit on cybercrime here in Los Angeles, where the whole subject is about the business implications. It's what typically makes the news here are, well, right now, of course, the theft of emails out of, Podesta's email stuff in the political realm, the Target breaches, things of that nature. The thing that most small businesses have to be concerned about, and it doesn't make the news, is what's called business email compromise. CFO, controller will get an email. It looks like it maybe comes from a vendor, maybe comes from the president, and it ultimately, it may take 3 or 4 emails until the hacker, the cyber criminal, kind of gets the hook set. But it's the intent is to get the controller to wire corporate funds out of the company to cyber criminals wherever they might be. A company, Ubiquity Networks, actually lost $46 million to business email compromise. The FBI here in Los Angeles knows of $14 million a month that goes out the door in this kind of crime, and that's just Los Angeles. So when you look at business implications of cybercrime, we're looking at really money as the most critical thing. But ultimately, it's the business, it's money. When you get hacked, it's your competitive advantage, it's the cost to recover from all of that, and ultimately it's your place in the market, it's your brand that, you know, look at Target and companies like that, look at Yahoo right now, all about being ready to be sold to Verizon and then have this breach announcement, and now maybe Verizon won't even buy them.
Good point. It's a huge impact. David, Peter?
Yeah, first of all, it's National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. I don't know if anyone was aware of that.
Good timing.
It is. So great timing. So kind of jumping on with what Stan's talked about, you know, the why behind cybercrime. He highlighted a couple of the more well-known items as well as the small business implication that isn't so well-known. But just giving some statistics here, you know, Visa, MasterCard, data, it's $4 each. American Express, $7 each. Discover Card, $7, $8. I don't know why that one's more. Credit cards with Track 1 and 2 info, $12. Personal info, $25 each. Bank account information for people that have $70,000 or more in the account, $300 each. Infected computers, $20 each. Distributed denial of service attacks, $3 to $5 per hour. and medical records could be up to $1,000 each. So that's some of the why. There's huge money in doing these crimes, and it could be financial, it could be political, it could be social and economic damages that the perpetrators are wishing to perpetrate. So just
the dollars start to add up.
Huh. Exactly.
Peter, any thoughts in this area?
I was going to add on. David just mentioned, really, there are a number of sort of ramifications of cybercrime. It often is sort of this large bucket that we tend to put a lot of different types of attack and hacking activity into. It's not necessarily, you know, falling into the definition of you know, criminal enterprise and for profit. There, you know, there's kind of an evolution. Originally cyber attacks started out more as, I'd call it the category of proof something. You know, that was website defacements, and, you know, we were here and we got in, and, you know, you should be aware of us. And it was a lot about ego and reputation. And then it became more, we're going to, you know, what I would call the phase of more harm something. You know, we're going to actually delete some data, or we're going to, you know, make it be annoying. You know, we're not necessarily going to destroy it, but we're going to, you know, do something to somehow interrupt or disrupt your business. And then kind of the stage, the third area is really more steal something. You know, that kind of more, you know, squarely falls into cybercrime. You know, there's obviously a financial motive involved. And then ultimately, I'd kind of say that the other area is destroy something. And we saw in the Sony Pictures attack, you know, the North Koreans, which were purported, and there's a lot of good evidence that it was their special North Korean military unit 121, where there's somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 cyber warriors that prepare for this type of attack, and they were clearly bent on, you know, destroying and causing as much damage. They weren't out to and they did, of course, steal some emails and some things to try to embarrass Sony. So, you know, there's sort of a broad range of, you know, when we talk about, you know, cyber threats and cyber attacks, cybercrime is certainly one aspect, but it's not really the only area necessarily that we need to be concerned about.
And we're going to be covering a number of areas during our panel today. Again, this is so cool to have you guys all together to address this really important topic for business. And we have small businesses and large companies attending today, both domestically and globally. So it's a huge impact. Let's go to the next question. Why are we so vulnerable? We have firewalls, antivirus. Why isn't this enough, or is it enough?
Well, it's nowhere near enough, unfortunately. And the biggest weakness we find is the human. If you look at what the Sony attack, the Target attack, which was actually through a vendor, their air conditioning company, but if you look at any of these attacks, and the very vast majority of them, except perhaps some of the nation state stuff, but the vast majority of them start with an email, a phishing campaign, often what's called a spear phishing campaign, where it's very targeted emails to various people in the company with either an attachment or a link in that email. And click that link, open that attachment, and you expose your company to malicious software, which can then, you have to follow each of the individual breaches to see what happens then. But that opening email to users sets the stage for all these cyber hacks. One of the things our company does, for example, is we will send out, on behalf of our clients, we'll send out phishing emails to the employees as a training tool. And we find, sadly, that without training, over half of people in a company will typically click on an email with, you know, click here to get your free Amazon gift card, your password is about to expire, click here to update it, things like that. They look legitimate, but they're not. And we've got to really do a much better job of training users to just don't click the link. You know, be very, very cautious. Know who you're talking to. before you click links.
A question came in on that subject, Stan. There could be lots of training, and then somebody just goes, "Uh-oh, I can't believe I just did that." Is there a line of defense to protect against the "Uh-oh, I just did this"?
There is, but few companies are really on the technology side. Our experience, few companies have implemented appropriate technologies, even keeping their systems patched and updated every week, which is the Australian Ministry of Defense has for years said that's one of the two or three or four most important things you can do. But Peter, you've got some technology there as well that'll protect the user once, you know, protect the company once the user clicks on that email. So Tuck, maybe you want to jump in here.
Yeah, thank you, Stan. You know, there's not a silver bullet, you know, there's not a pill, you know, to take care of this. Every time we make a big, you know, technological advance, you know, some of the areas that we've been developing have to do with behavior. Instead of, you know, looking at, as we monitor our customers' networks, which is what our main focus of our business is, do cyber threat monitoring. And, you know, we look at triggers, you know, typically these are called alerts that fire off and it says somebody, you know, did something. And in the old days, this was typically a rule, you know, or a policy where some matching condition happened. We saw this amount of information in a certain, you know, format or pattern and it met this criteria that was pre-established. Well, the problem is you can't predict what the pattern is going to look like if you haven't seen it before. And that's actually one of the big challenges with a lot of the technology is they're designed to work on, you know, predetermined specified patterns or ranges within patterns. And, you know, that's sort of old school thinking because, you know, today's cyber attacks are, you know, we've never seen a lot of them happen before. You know, they're archived, there's vulnerabilities that are sitting there that haven't been taken advantage of and people are selling them. And so there's this, there's just a real challenge of every time we make some sort of, you know, technological advancement or innovation, you know, then the attackers are like, well, I'm going to now mask my activities and I'm going to log in during regular business hours instead of at 2 a.m. in the morning on a Sunday, where I might be more easily detected because that's a deviation from the typical, you know, pattern of how users behave on the network. So even today, attackers are starting to shift their behavior to make their behavior more like, you know, normal, regular users. And so fortunately, it's never going to go away. You know, it's a matter of how well are you fighting the battle. And there's also a huge, huge cost. I think that many business owners and CEOs and individuals inside companies that are responsible for risk management in their organization really look at it and go, my gosh, this is never going to end. We're pouring, you know, buckets of money, and it's still not necessarily, you know, preventing the problem. And they're right to an extent. The question is how much is enough? You know, what's appropriate for your organization? That varies based on your size, your industry, you know, your risk profile, risk appetite. You know, chances are they're going to get breached at some point. So it's not a matter of if, it'll be when. And so now, you know, getting out of that more reactive mindset into something a little more proactive, like how do we contain it once it happens and how do we mitigate it? That to me is sort of like the future of where we need to be spending more time thinking. And firewall and antivirus and other, you know, countermeasures are great, but there's a real focus on the prevention side and not enough focus on the mindset of, hey, we're going to get compromised. Let's make sure that we can, you know, minimize the impact that has in terms of our brand, reputation, customers, data, and so forth.
And we a couple months ago, apparently a robot tried to get in our system, and thank goodness everything had been updated with patches, and the system just shut itself down right away. But you're right, we need to be very, very vigilant on these things. Before we go to the next slide, any other thoughts on this topic? Because it's huge.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
I was just going to add, you know, it's not a case of if, it's a case of when, as Peter alluded to. So having a plan to address the situation, because these things are coming at us in so many different ways. You know, a firewall isn't going to stop the the email that says, hey, wire me $100,000, I'm your boss. You know, that's not a firewall issue. It's not an antivirus issue. It's a human issue. You have employees that work outside the office that may be outside the firewall. So there's so many different circumstances that we now have to consider when thinking about cybersecurity. Cisco just recently had a huge security hole that they recently patched, but in August, an exploit was found on one of their top-end appliances that allowed someone to take complete control of that firewall. You know, and if you're not on top of your patching, then that exploit's open today. So, you know, there's so many different areas of thought, and it's impossible for one person to keep on top of everything. And it's not a case of if, it's a case of when, and having that plan.
And just to loop back to Peter's discussion about costs on this, there's an organization called the Poneman Institute, which does a lot of research in the cost of cyber breaches and things of that nature. And their latest report indicates that a company that's prepared to deal with an intrusion will typically save about 25% of the costs. Their costs will be about 25% lower to recover from that incident than companies that are not yet prepared. So even as you're looking at what's this going to cost us up front, look at what's this going to cost us at the back end, and oftentimes you can significantly lower your total cost of security by spending a little bit of money up front instead of a lot of money on the back end after the breach.
Good point. Good point. Which is a great segue into the next topic. We talked a little about business emails and compromise. We had a client, and they probably did between $10 and $20 million of revenue. Somehow somebody got into the accounting department, and they held them for ransom, and they wanted $2,500, and they had to be paid within 48 hours, or they were going to pay for it. So they opted to pay for it, and they got everything back. What are your guys' thoughts on this?
Backups, 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 and backups. It's such a challenge. Cause again, one of the challenges all businesses have is just knowing where their sensitive information is. We got a call not too long ago from an accounting firm in Orange County that had been hit with ransomware. Their IT guy said, don't worry about it, we'll just restore the backups, which they did. Cool, good, that's wonderful. Then they discovered 2 years' worth of clients' tax information, several clients, where it had been sitting on a workstation, had never made it to the server, had never been backed up, and now they didn't have all their information back. So, in fact, now they had to deal with paying this ransomware. So most important, make sure you know where your information is and you've got it all backed up and you've tested that you can recover all of it and you know that you've got it all backed up. I mean, we're beginning to see technology, but it's still backups are most important.
And Stan, you brought up a really good point there to test it out, run drills to see if it really does work or not. Other thoughts? And what are people charging for the ransomware?
They're keeping it a low amount to keep it under the FBI radar. What most of them are doing. So it's in the low thousands, few hundred to low thousands.
That's what this company did. They called the FBI, but it was under the radar because it was $2,500.
Yeah. That's a real challenge law enforcement has right now. To the FBI, Secret Service, here in L.A., again, the District Attorney's Office of L.A. County, all of them are working very aggressively to try to prevent cybercrime from happening because they know once it happens, their ability to help the victim is very, very limited. So they're all out, like at this conference the U.S. Attorney's Office is having today, just how do we help the executives, the people who really are the losers in this, how do we help them? That's why I started Secure the Village, is just to provide the kind of education and training. And Dana, I mean, you're to be congratulated as well for having us, on this webinar. You're helping educate the community this way so that they won't become victims of business email compromise and ransomware and, you know, denial of service attacks and things like that.
Thank you. And, that, and by the way, this program is going to go out to about 3,000 associations across the country and globally, too. So it's going to spread out, to spread the word to help deal with this issue. Peter, any thoughts on protection in this area?
So the interesting thing about ransomware, so 88% of all ransomware attacks, at least a study reported by a company called the Becker's Hospital Review, said that they were all focused on healthcare and hospitals specifically, 88%. So obviously not only is it a juicy target, but the larger question is why? Well, you think about how enabled, you know, hospitals are. We've got our medical records now all fully, you know, electronic, and there's a lot of technology in hospitals. I mean, you know, every machine, you know, is plugged into an Ethernet port or on a wireless, and so there's a lot of technology. But essentially, this is reflective of the amount of, you know, capability that our hospitals have. In other words, the more capability that we deliver through technology, the greater potential for impact based on, you know, attack. So ransomware is sort of the perfect storm, in a sense, for an industry where there's a lot of technology enablement. And I think we're going to see the same trend occur as businesses become more automated and there's more systems that run our businesses and are responsible for operations and less sort of human interaction. We're going to find that the same trend, I think, is going to also follow those types of industries. So we're seeing it right now with healthcare, but I think this is just the beginning.
It's huge. And I want to emphasize to everybody that's on the program, drill, drill, drill. One of the things that our IS person had us do was to run scenarios. And when we were attacked, we had gone through the drill, so even though the system had automatically shut down, which it was supposed to have done, we were up and running pretty quickly again. But that was only because we had prepared for it. So preparation is really key. Let's go into the next question, public Wi-Fi and other exposure. And you have staff members out, maybe even remote. They could be sitting at a Starbucks doing something.
So earlier this year, two interesting incidents took place. One was at the Black Hat 2016 Information Security Conference, which is kind of a good hacker conference. And someone had set up a wireless access point and tricked about 35,000 people who should have known better into thinking they were on a safe network. And then earlier this year at the Olympics, mobile threat defense company SkyCure announced that they had discovered several suspicious access points and some malicious applications running around on the Wi-Fi networks at the Olympics. So Wi-Fi is obviously a threat.
Wow.
Yeah, this is so go ahead. This is Peter. I was going to mention that the safest, you know, when we're, you know, there was also a report a few years ago of, well, when we had the Sochi Olympics, right, people that, you know, turned their smartphones on once they got into Russia, found their phones compromised, you know, within a matter of minutes on the Android system, and Apple probably took about half an hour, I think. But the best response is probably to turn, when you go into high-risk type environments, is to leave them off.
Yeah, very, very. I completely agree with that. Very, very true. Going to China, going to Russia, take new equipment and throw it in the ocean on your way back, you know, because you don't know it will have been compromised that way. But the whole question of public Wi-Fi, other exposures, just is an illustration. In the old days, and that's even, you know, just a few years ago, you could define a security perimeter for a company. It was what was behind the firewall. There was a network, and all the computing devices were connected directly to the network all behind the firewall. That's all changed. We use corporate Wi-Fi. we check Wi-Fi in our hotel rooms now or at the airport or even on the airplane. We bring our own devices into the corporate infrastructure. I have an iPad. We all have tablets or smartphones with which we access the corporate environment. That whole process, just that whole reality, just makes security that much more difficult. The perimeter's gone. So we can attack. I mean, one of the concerns we always have with our clients is they'll regularly access their corporate environment from their home network. Well, what's on their home network? How secure is that? You know, is there Wi-Fi in the home network that maybe the next door neighbor has climbed on top, onto? So just being able to wrap your head around where all this sensitive information is when it's outside the corporate firewall, in the cloud and other places, on remote desktops and on tablets and so on. Wrap your head around what all that information is, and then how do you protect all those devices as well? You can't ignore that when you're looking at the security, at securing the organization.
So for securing it, that's something everyone could talk to their IT person about or call any of you, because everyone uses Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
So there are ways to protect them.
There are some technologies out there that will enforce policy based on what type of network you're on. So if you're on a public Wi-Fi, it can force you to use the VPN, for example, or it can maybe even preclude you from being able to get on the local Starbucks. I mean, companies need to probably take a stronger approach in deciding, what risks are allowable and which ones aren't.
And the device can actually sense if it's okay or not?
Yeah, not on its own. I mean, usually it requires a third-party product, an agent that runs on the laptop or device that says, oh, okay, I'm connecting to a public network, and is this one approved? No, it's not. Okay, or if it's within country, it is, and out of country, it's not. I mean, some of these products are pretty flexible in how you can configure them to operate. But very few companies, I find, in reality, really take a very active stance in doing that.
Okay.
And by the way, Black Hat, as I think David brought up, everybody knows, don't even bring your laptop and turn it on during Black Hat. I mean, don't even think that by turning off your wireless, you're somehow not vulnerable, because that's been proven not to be true. I wouldn't worry about that in your standard Starbucks, but certainly a place like Black Hat or DEF CON, yeah, I don't think I'd really bring anything with me.
And there's actually been reported incidences where you'll be at a public place that has charging cables, and the charging cables, they can hack your phone through. Though some of that's been shored up by Apple and by Android, but, I mean, even just what seem to be innocent charging cables can have the ability to hack into your phone. So.
Oh, my goodness. Every little thing.
Bring your own cables.
Yeah. It's a jungle out there.
It's a jungle.
Wild, wild west. Yep.
Behavioral analytics, next security buzzword or real value?
I think yes and yes. In some sense, security needs all the buzzwords in some ways we can get. I'm excited by the prospect of behavioral analytics because it's you're able to do correlations of events. I mean, Peter, you'll talk about this more, but from a defensive perspective, I think this is a piece of the future of defense.
Well, I think this is since this is my area of expertise, it's a new area. It's still growing. It uses concepts like data lakes and big data and machine learning and things like that. And we're not going to get into that on this call or this webinar. But there are a lot of really exciting things that are being taken advantage of. The ability to really sift through more data at an ever-increasing speed has allowed us to provide deeper levels of detection. And, one of the interesting quotes by General Alexander, who was the general of the U.S. Cyber Command for a number of years before he retired and went into private practice, So General Alexander said that in most, if not all, of their investigations they did with government agencies, they found out that the attackers that had breached the environment had been in there for a year or more. And so, you know, we're talking the real stealthy attackers, the one that can either seriously do you harm or the ones that are difficult to detect or using single-use malware and, you know, things that are just not your antivirus and your firewall isn't going to, you know, likely find. You know, that's where behavioral, you know, kinds of approaches can really make a big difference. But it's kind of scary to think that, you know, there are organizations out there already breached, they just don't know it. And in fact, I would say a huge percentage of organizations are in this situation. And in fact, I'll even, you know, to be fully honest here, before we adopted this, some of our technology and this technique, we actually found phone systems that had Trojans with backdoor Trojans embedded in them that we never detected with previous technology. And when we turned on the behavioral capabilities, all of a sudden we saw things, threats inside customer environments that we had never seen before that had been there actually for some time. So it's, you know, that sort of reinforces my earlier point, which is, you know, there's probably some percentage of attacks and breaches that are just not detectable, right? Now, the question is how close to detection can we get it, and what does it cost, and so forth.
Wow. Holy cow.
Yes.
This topic is, so you guys are, you'll be around for many years to come.
Job security, that's for sure.
Job security all the way. Now, some organizations that are on the call today, on the program, or listening to this, will have a board. Some will not. Some will be working with a roundtable group, whether it's Vistage or Executive Forum or something like that, or CEO to CEO, or just consultants. How do you bring this up to people? How do you speak to others about this, the level of importance of it?
Well, go ahead. Well, from my perspective, it's having the conversation. In some, if you step back to 100,000 feet, to us, information security management is the conversation. It's having that conversation with the board, with the C-suite, with IT, with users, and getting them into a regular, ongoing, let's talk about this in appropriate ways. And with the board, that means governance. Their responsibility here is in some ways to make sure that the security manager and that whole mechanism, how that's structured and all, make sure that's working right. So the board's got to watch over the security. And that means security in turn has got to be able to take what it's doing and learn how to communicate in a way that the board cares about. So you're looking at you know, the nature, you know, the safety of the business, the risk elements. I mean, and risk is the key word here, helping the board understand cyber risk and what the company is doing about it. But ultimately, it's stepping back. It's just make sure you've got that conversation going on.
Okay, on a regular basis.
Yes, yeah. Okay. To the board at least quarterly.
Okay. David, thoughts on this or Peter?
Yeah, I was going to just add, you know, whether it's the board or a small business owner or executive committee, whatever that top-level group is, you know, they're responsible to all the stakeholders, whether it's the employees, it's customers, shareholders. You know, this group is responsible to all those people, and ignorance just is not an acceptable excuse in this matter anymore. So these people, whether it's board members or owners, or like I said, executive committee members, they need to get educated. And so there definitely has to be a conversation as to what the threats out there are. And then it's that group's responsibility to determine what their risk tolerance is. We heard Peter mention risk earlier. But it's at this level that risk tolerance has to be established so that the enterprise knows how to then allocate funds to address these issues. So it's got to start at the top.
Good point.
I would add that, you know, cybersecurity is, you know, a risk management problem for the entire business, not really an IT problem anymore. And I think that's just a changing perception. I'm encouraged. We're certainly seeing more education I have a friend of mine, a former Silicon Valley CEO, who is actually a board member for, I think it's like Colgate or Procter & Gamble, or, you know, one of those consumer, you know, goods organizations. And she has to educate these board members about, you know, they question her all the time about, well, you know, do we really need to be doing this? Is the money we're spending really that necessary? And you'd think that after, you know, the Target and, you know, the executive shakeup that happened where executives essentially lost their jobs and their forced resignations, you know, you'd think that they would have more reverberations throughout corporate America, but you know, it still seems like, you know, boards need to be convinced. I certainly think that it's moving in the right direction. We're seeing better risk management frameworks being applied, and boards being educated, and discussions of risk now being mandated in some cases, like within NCOA and other organizations that govern the banks and financial institutions within the country. But again, it's still, you know, we still got a long ways to go, in my opinion.
One of the factoids that can help in that education in the small and medium-sized business world space is that statistics indicate that for these smaller companies that get breached, 60% of them go out of business within 6 months. They just don't have the deep pockets of a Sony or a Target or a Home Depot to recover from these kinds of events. And that 60% number can speak volumes to the board.
Wow.
I had started to mention at the beginning that the AICPA has taken a big interest in this area. They actually have two proposed criteria sets to assist management in designing and describing cybersecurity risk management programs. So they're into what the board's responsibilities are shifting to as well, and trying to set up frameworks to help guide businesses with this process.
One last comment. I know we're going to move on here, Dana, but the question here, I don't think enough businesses are really posing is, you know, what is a reasonable level of acceptable risk that the company is willing to accept, you know, and once you have that figured out, do you have business process match risk tolerance internally? I mean, that needs to be embedded into the thinking of the organization at every level.
And Peter, that's a good point. I was talking to somebody, and they came up with a number, and they said, what if our business is shut down for 24 hours? What if it's shut down for 48 hours? And they played it out for a whole week if the damage was really that deep. And that they came up with their number of what they can work with then. Okay, now we found our budget number, in a sense. So here is the question. Company's been hacked. Now what? What do you do?
Well, it gets kind of into what you were just talking about. First is assessing what is this going to cost to remediate. You have to do an investigation. You have to remediate. You have to do notification depending on the type of breach that it is. So you may be sending out letters and emails to hundreds or thousands or hundreds of thousands of people. Potentially having to cover identity theft repair and credit monitoring. You may be exposed to regulatory fines. There's a potential of lost business, whether it's your own downtime or time that resources are spent trying to remediate, disruption of normal business operations, and then you potentially could be liable to a class action suit.
Whoa.
I'm not trying to scare anyone.
Right, but those are the realities here. It goes back to one of the things we talked about earlier, the idea of being prepared. A company should have an incident response plan on the shelf that they can take off, and they've trained in it, they're practiced in it, and they can run with it. But that also includes, now, you've got to get law and legal involved because of what you just said, you know, with there may be breach disclosures and things like that. You've got to get forensics involved to sort out, you know, they're the ones who can go in and look at all the machines, look at the log files and whatever's there and sort out what really did happen. Sometimes even when we had a situation where a company had been hacked, they discovered that when the FBI knocked on their door and told them they should look at a particular computer. We got called in at that point. Yes, they had been hacked, but nothing had been exfiltrated. Nothing had left the company. The software, the hacking software, was there on this computer. It had called home, but had never transferred any data. So in that case, just having forensics involved was able to establish there was no true breach of sensitive information, so there was no need to make a breach disclosure announcement. I mean, that can save a company zillions of dollars here. But in those cases where you do have to make a breach announcement, when legal and forensic says you got to do it, now it's, you know, you got to pull your PR team. Again, that should all be in the plan, but you've got to get the PR communication people involved. And ultimately as well, you want to get law enforcement involved here, both to protect yourself, and law enforcement can often take the information from one breach and throw it into their database and now potentially protect other companies from analogous breaches. So I'd say that, you know, the legal, forensics, PR, and law enforcement in involvement are critical here.
Ooh. Wow. Okay. Right. Any other thoughts?
Well, I think it comes down to making sure you have that plan, and I know we're going to get to that item, but if you can demonstrate that you did the right things and you weren't negligent in your responsibilities of protecting your customer data or your employee data or whatever it is, you're going to weather that storm a whole lot better than if you just put your head in the sand.
Back to planning, planning, planning.
Yep.
So people are thinking right now, oh, my goodness, I better meet with my IT person right now. Top three things they should be talking to IT about or their IS person.
So first thing, most important, is IT keeping systems updated and patched on a regular basis. As I mentioned earlier, the Australian Ministry of Defense has called out patching and updating as one of the two or three or four most important things you could do. Second, just the recognition that IT and information security are not the same. IT's got a different set of responsibilities that oftentimes does not include security. We often find in the smaller business space, IT may offer, for example, patching services to a client, and the client, not understanding why that's important, doesn't want to pay for that. So there's that disconnect there. So IT having a good security understanding themselves and being able to communicate that understanding to management is absolutely vital. Beyond that, in terms of the three things, I mean, we have a set of standards for securing the IT infrastructure. Other organizations have analogous things, but that's looking at the IT infrastructure from a very systemic, top-down perspective and making sure that you've got everything covered, from patching to how the architecture is built, where are the firewalls and things like that, for example, what you're doing in cloud security, how you're protecting that, making sure that, you know, you've got that under control, making sure that encryption is being properly applied, logs are being kept, and so on. I mean, there's a whole bundle of stuff that IT has got to get their heads around to properly manage security.
Question came in around, how often should everybody be changing their passwords, and does it matter?
What we're seeing is, yeah, it's a good question. It's the general rule of thumb is now, you know, it's less important to change passwords that frequently. There was just a recent study by one of the groups involved in Homeland Security to that effect. What's critical about passwords are, first of all, different passwords for different situations. Don't use your LinkedIn password for your bank password for your password to the corporate network. All passwords should be different. They should be long, complex. Our standard is now 12 characters, uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and special characters, because it's just too easy to hack shorter ones. Third thing, use a good password manager, RoboForm, LastPass, and so on, with like a 20-character passphrase for those. And organizations that support what's called second-factor authentication should use that as well. I mean, banks are beginning to use that more and more often. Our standard is if you come in remotely to your network from a remote device, a home computer, whatever, that you do it over a VPN, a virtual private network, with second-factor authentication. I mean, these are some of the things that I see as vital with passwords.
Okay. Thank you.
I was going to add in about, you know, things we wished we should have done. You know, well, I think we've spent some time on the call today talking about preparation really being the most important, you know, phase rather than being reactive. But we also need to sort of test those things out, testing out our what would actually happen. I mean, you know, very few people actually go through disaster recovery, you know, scenarios where they actually test it. Same is true with cyber. But one of the things that I think can be one of the most beneficial is an annual internal audit. I mean, a very thorough, it could take the form of a pen test, but the audit really needs to include policies, not just, you know, technical controls that, you know, am I, you know, can somebody get in from the outside? Or my email address is accessible remotely in a way that can, you know, email accounts can be compromised. But a thorough annual audit is really, I think, the beginning to sort of map out where are my greatest risks and vulnerabilities. And then you can kind of create some, you know, kind of like a larger punch list of, all right, let's go close these holes up first, get these out of the way, and then we can start working on the more medium level ones. You'll probably never get around to fixing the low level ones and maybe even some of the mediums, because there'll always be a top list of, you know, high end criticals that, you know, you'll probably want to stay focused on. But the idea is that there's this sort of, it's built in as a process, and that audits are ongoing. You know, that would include, you know, scans each quarter, and, you know, sort of, you know, checkups to make sure that throughout the year your controls are in place, you're actually doing what you say you do. As the organizations get bigger and more complex and people go around the IT department by subscribing to various cloud services, where there's no centralization through an IT department anymore on those, or lean IT departments where they're not consulted when they adopt certain software platforms that are used as a service. Again, these can circumvent a lot of the security policies and controls the business has put in place to protect themselves. So I think it's really important to, on an ongoing basis, really ensure that a thorough audit. You know, and then once that's done, then you can look at what kind of countermeasures, what changes, what security awareness, maybe even, you know, cyber monitoring if you want to try to use a third party to do that. You know, there's a lot of ways you can do it inexpensively, but you've got to start, I think, at the beginning in developing a roadmap.
And I'll just add education, education, education. You got to keep everyone from the receptionist to your most technical person, they all got to be continually educated on what the risks are out there and how to avoid the basic ones, for sure.
Yeah.
That's so for medium-sized business, how do people find out? We covered a number of these things already for setting expectations with ITIS, or information services. Where can people go to get a checklist of what they should be covering?
Call us. Yeah.
Call anybody on this panel. Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's stuff out there. Peter mentioned the NIST framework just as an example. The real challenge we find, and again, most of our clients are in the small and medium-sized business space. It's not the what do you do, kind of what's out there that we could grab our hands on and begin to use? It's really, how do we make that real in a small and medium-sized environment? So much, for example, of the National Institute of Standards and Technology and organizations like that, the Cloud Security Alliance, when they build standards, they're built for the Fortune 50 or the Fortune 100 or government or things like that. And taking that and figuring out where the nuggets of the kernels of protection, of risk management, that just have to be made real in that small and medium-sized space. And that to me, is one of the real challenges here.
And this is a specialization area. So just because you have somebody that's running your IT or information services activity, and they may think they know the best they can on this topic, but this is a very complex issue, whether it's a small business or a large business. So reaching out to a specialist, I think it's vital to know where you're at. And it's going to take leadership, and everyone's brought up today, have a culture of awareness. So this
yes.
is, do you guys want to close on this topic? Any closing thoughts for everybody? And then we're going to open up the line.
Yeah. Well, again, to me, it goes back to what I mentioned earlier, that at some level, information security is a conversation, and that's leadership and culture. That's leadership encouraging that conversation to happen, whether through policies, through training, through talking to IT, through having governance with the board, those things. It's let's talk about this.
That's actually a good onboarding topic when someone comes into a company. Haven't thought of that before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we do training, we'll make a video of it and give the client the video so that when they hire new employees, they can have them sit down and watch the video.
Ooh, very clever. Peter, David, any closing thoughts?
It starts with the top. Like we said, so, you know, the board, the owners, the management team, they all have to be in tune and be willing to support the efforts of a cybersecurity assessment of the things that come out of that assessment, and within budgetary restraints, you know, doing the best they can to put together a plan and implementation of securing their systems.
So I would add to that. I would also echo the previous comments. I think there's, you can kind of take a top-down and as well as a bottom-up strategy on this. I mean, I think everybody would agree that it's best if you have, you know, complete alignment with the company executives, including the board and the CEO, and that's often an education matter. You know, there's obviously, you know, education needs to be ongoing there. But that's really the top down. It's always the best, you know, because you can get that, you know, whether it's budgeting or risk management, but it's really incorporated into the business plan from the top. Now, I also think that depending on the level of either awareness or importance that the executive team sees, I think there's also a bottom-up strategy where, you know, from the IT organization, depending on whether or not there's somebody who, you know, has that information security function that's dedicated or just part of the IT organization. But, you know, they can bring that education and that awareness to bear from the bottom up, where they train their managers and they continue to carry that message, as well as suggestions and ideas for cost-effective risk management within the organization, you know, from the IT side of the organization. So I think both approaches are valid. Just you remember there's different cultures, and some organizations are not going to be as receptive to spending money proactively because, you know, they may not believe that the risks are real, and perhaps they haven't experienced it in such a way where they feel it's worth, you know, spending the funds, you know, to do that. So nobody wants to end up in a headline, but, you know, unless you understand how vulnerable you are, it's kind of hard for a business owner or executive to make a good business decision about how much and how much effort to put into such efforts.
Wow. You guys are amazing. This has been a phenomenal program. We're going to open up the line in just a minute here. We run to the top of the hour. Normally we close a little bit earlier, but this is such an important topic. We could go on for another couple hours, I'm sure. For our next open line, if you'd like to sign up, the topic is silos, breaking them down, and prevention techniques. And that program will take place on November 15th. I'm going to turn the recording feature off in just a second because we've had individuals ask us not to record the voices for those of you that ask questions for whatever reason. So I want to close this part of it down while we are being recorded. I want to thank Peter, David, and Stan. Wow. All I can say is wow. Amazing. And I would invite all of you listening to this program, attending it, to reach out to any of the panel participants today who will be very generous with their time if you have questions or thoughts. So, and thank you for attending Open Line. And please send in your ideas for other topics or panel topics. They seem to be a very big hit. So let me close this down. We're going to be right back. Let me just turn the recording feature off, and then we'll open the lineup. So please stand by.